Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
It's a turkey leg each for Liverpool and Arsenal at Anfield as the top two in the Premier League duke it out to a Christmas standstill. Welcome to Ramble Reacts. It's Saturday, 23rd of December. I'm Luke Moore.
And I'm Jim Campbell.
Right, before we get into the main thrust of the show, a quick reminder that our Toshiba competition starts on Friday. We're giving you the chance to win a brand new 50-inch Toshiba Fire QLED TV. And we're not just giving away one of them or two of them. We're giving away three. So if a free 50-inch TV sounds like a good way to kick off 2024, then listen out for details of how to enter, because all will be revealed at the end of Friday's show. Now, it ended 1-1 at Anfield this evening after Mo Salah sensationally cancelled out Gabriel's early header with a fantastic pants pulling down of Alexander Zinchenko, it has to be said. And the game that was tipped to be a key indicator of which direction the Premier League title was heading in this season, as well as the frankly quite empty boast of being top at Christmas, the game ended all square. That means Arsenal hit Christmas 2023 top of the table for the second season in a row. They've got 40 points and are therefore definitely staying up this season, and Liverpool sit 1 point back in second on 39. Jim, what did you make of the game?
I am relieved it's over. My blood pressure is in a better state than it was about half an hour ago. It's a funny one. I'd convinced myself many, many times that we were going to lose that game. And it feels a much better point than the point Arsenal got at Anfield last season. Obviously, they were 2-0 up and managed to draw the game. Liverpool really sort of bombarded Arsenal in the sort of first period of the second half. But I thought, actually, they managed that quite well. And it was a far less emotional performance than we've often seen from Arsenal teams at Anfield, where they go there and they get a little bit overawed and it all gets a bit chaotic. Because there were spells like that, certainly in that first portion of the first half, where they couldn't string passes together, they were kind of overcomplicating things, and Liverpool were kind of camped in Arsenal's half. But they kind of rode that out really well. And I'm actually sort of quite impressed that they came out of that with a point, because I don't think they played particularly well. There are a few individuals that, you know, were lacking a little bit. We'll come on to Zinchenko's role in Salah's goal. And I think Gabriel Martinelli was kind of under-hitting things a lot and miscontrolling things a lot. There were a few players where they weren't quite at their best. So to come away from a point I'm pretty happy with that, to be honest.
Yeah. And you know, Arsenal were right at the races from the very start. I mean, their movement, their intensity was really good. And as soon as they scored, I was wondering if that, you know, obviously I don't support either team, so I just wanted to watch a good game, of course. I wondered if an early Arsenal goal would be the best thing that could happen to the game, you know, because, you know, Liverpool have to come out and do something. The last time, you know, we've seen Liverpool play in a big league game, it was against Manchester United. It was fucking awful.
Yeah.
Ended 0-0. Because basically it takes two to tango, and Man United were not dancing. They were staying in their seat and nursing their Diet Coke. And I think when an away team in a game that big, you know, which does mean something, there is something riding on it, score early, it does then become interesting to see how the home team approach it, especially set against the kind of background of the fact that, again, in that aforementioned Man United game, you know, Liverpool, the atmosphere at Anfield was so poor that, you know, the commentators were talking about it. Jurgen Klopp then follows up and says that he needs the fans to be better. That was quite controversial. And then Liverpool did come to play, though, and at times it became kind of a bit of a basketball game. And then Mo Salah did what he wasn't seemingly able to do against Manchester United, which was just pull something out of nowhere, you know. And Jim, I have to give you props here, because this is very, very likely to be the last time I'm going to give you any credit, probably for the rest of the calendar year. But you did say yesterday that the Zinchenko versus Salah matchup was problematic from an Arsenal point of view, and it was proven to be the case. Now, the only caveat to that is just that, you know, Mo Salah is quite good. And so it's not like, I don't think on paper, an embarrassment to have that goal scored against you. But the manner of it and the game he had overall meant it was a bit of a mismatch, to the point where Gary Neville was just taking it really personally and battering him on the comms. I'm not really sure why.
But so
you called it. You were worried about it. You were right to be worried about it. It was a fantastic goal, though, wasn't it? I mean, it was
just it was a brilliant goal. It's sort of, it feels a little bit soft. Given
just
the
seems
sort
to
of
cut in so easily.
Well, that's it, isn't it?
And the lazy leg makes it look worse. It's stanky leg. Yeah.
Yeah, I think as well, Gabriel's got to get out faster to Salah. He is a player that you have to pay special attention to, and I think you simply can't let him get away. You can't let him get a shot off in the box because he's so efficient with them. And I think they were just, it's unfortunate because it's one really sloppy moment. That actually, it's mad given the chances Liverpool managed to create. Obviously, Trent Alexander-Arnold's chance in the second half where he hit the bar was a better chance than
we'll
that.
We'll come on to that, Jim. Don't jump ahead. Think of it like a film. Don't do the end bit.
But like Memento, though. I'm quite highbrow with
I'm hosting
taste,
it is so. Like Memento. I'm all over the place. So where I am.
But yeah, like I say, given the battering that Arsenal took in the second half at times, like it does seem quite strange that the goal they conceded was a relatively sort of soft one. But
look, before the Liverpool goal, there was a really big flashpoint, and it was the Martin Ødegaard situation, handball in the penalty area. Now, it was fortunate from Arsenal's point of view that penalty wasn't given. It was checked by VAR. It was deemed not to be clear and obvious. That's at the time of recording. We know sometimes VAR like to amend the narrative as time moves forward, and it sometimes ends up with a Howard Webb apology on TV, which is demeaning for everyone involved. But at this point, it's called not a clear and obvious error. Now, I don't understand how that cannot be given as a penalty. I mean, I'll get your take on it in just a second, but if I may, you know, the law states that if a player deliberately touches the ball with their hand or arm, for example, moving the hand or arm towards the ball, then a penalty should be given. Now, I know he slips. I know that the hand goes down to break his fall, but he does handle the ball more than once in a way that stops the ball in the penalty area going through to, I think, Mo Salah. To me, it feels like we can discuss whether the refereeing team have implemented the law properly, or whether the law just needs to change or whatever, because that the law exists for a reason. The law exists so that the defensive team cannot get an advantage from a handball in their own penalty area, which is blatantly what happened there. And I just felt like it was such a weird decision. I don't know how you feel about it. Try and take your Arsenal hat off for a second if you can. Tell me what you think of the decision objectively.
Absolutely, completely feel that we got away with one there. I think if, notwithstanding one of those embarrassing apologies where little Mickey Owen sat there like a gibbon, I think if that is a proper implementation of the handball law, it's a great illustration of just how convoluted it's become. Because it, as you're right to mention the advantage that Arsenal gained there. Like, you know, that it's just daft if that's not given as a handball. And it is one of those things where, were it down the other end, I'd be fuming. You'd want that penalty. Absolutely. But the thing is, you get into chaos theory here, don't you? So I have decided that Liverpool would have missed it. I don't know if that is of any sort
that'll
of comfort
be
to any
to their
Liverpool
wounds,
fans
for
listening.
Sure. They'll be that. I mean, they will be typically even-minded about that. Now you've said that.
Yeah.
We should probably clip that out for social media so everyone can hear it. It was funny what at halftime when Theo Walcott, who I think is actually quite an interesting pundit, he comes out with some quite good stuff. The thing about it is, and I don't mean this in a horrible way, he looks like he's going to be bad.
I know what you mean.
He looks like... Yeah, like he's just been invited and he's not quite sure what's going on.
Well, he looks a bit rabbit in the headlights at the moment, doesn't he?
He also looks really young.
He does, yeah. I think he's going to look young when he's 100 years old. It's a strange thing. He somehow looks like Dominic Calvert-Lewin's younger brother, despite being much older than him at the moment. It's really weird.
He does. But when it was announced by, I think, David Jones that, you know, it wasn't given as a clear and obvious error, so yeah, that's why the penalty wasn't given, Walcott just went, yeah, lovely. That's like all he said.
Yeah, he's on the start of his punditry journey, isn't he? I think he's going to be good, though. He's always been very
I enjoy listening to him.
And good.
He's very, very thoughtful. So you pair up against someone like Jamie Redknapp, who is a lovely man, but not necessarily, this might not be as diplomatic as I'm trying to make it, perhaps not capable of being as thoughtful. It's quite an interesting combination. I think it worked quite well. But so that everyone's baffled by it. The thing, I don't want to dwell on this forever because it's probably quite boring for people listening, but the point I just like to make is that we watch football all the time. Like, it's our job. Like, we've been doing this show for a long time. You know, we haven't quite been found out yet, so we must know a little bit about the game. And not saying a massive amount, not saying we're experts, but we're enthusiasts who know a bit about the game. And we watch that and we don't know what we're seeing. We don't understand the decision still now. And then you'll go to Sky Sports commentary team or the punditry team, you know, basically the chief broadcaster for the league. They don't know either.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you get a situation where they'll ask a referee who they've employed for the night or on Soccer Saturday or whatever, and the decision will be explained. They don't get it. It just seems to be, it's got to be massively simplified. Mm. Yeah, I just thought it was, I'm determined not to spend too much time talking about it because I don't want it to be the big takeaway.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because there was plenty of other stuff to talk about. I really felt like the atmosphere seemed much improved as well. Did you? I think the fans responded.
It's, as we were talking about the other week, the thing with Anfield in particular, and St James's Park gets a bit like this as well, is that every time an opposition player chests the ball, the crowd are calling for a handball. Every like tackle or interception is seen as a foul, and it's, you know, it puts pressure on referees, it puts pressure on the other team, it makes you feel like you're being hounded and sort of just pressed from the stands as well as on the pitch. It's a huge, huge asset, and yeah, the crowd was definitely up today. Klopp knows what he's doing, doesn't he?
Because it was just a better game from the outset and because Arsenal came to dance, or do you think it was because of what Klopp said, or maybe both?
It's hard to sort of separate it, isn't it? But I think on a Saturday night, under the lights, you know, those all-important lights, the hydroponics.
What do you make of the atmosphere? Lights?
I'm a big fan of the lights.
Were they hydroponic, were they? Is that why the grass was so fucked?
Well, exactly, yeah. Yeah, very sticky. It was weird. It was really strange, wasn't it? It was like one of those Japanese game shows where people have to sort of like climb up something like with soapy water all over it and everyone just sort of stacks it constantly.
And in the past, when the pitch has been historically bad, like, you know, however many years ago, tends to mean that teams adapt how they play. But of course, now teams aren't prepared to do that. They train to pass. So what really made it stark, the quality of the pitch, and if people are listening, haven't watched the game, maybe they don't know what we're talking about, but the pitch seemed to be weird in a way that it wasn't weird last time there was a televised game at Anfield. I don't know why, maybe someone will come out about it, but players were slipping all over the place. It wasn't just one team that was slipping, both of them were. And they just didn't adapt their game at all. There's no way a team like Liverpool or Arsenal are going to say, well, look, the pitch is a bit shit, so we're going to fucking hit the corners. They're not going to do that. And so it just exaggerated how bad it looked because the teams were just sticking to their game plan. You know, it was understandably so. I mean, there was a particular bit, I don't think this was necessarily related to the pitch, although it might have been, when Bukayo Saka leans into the back of Tsimikas, who goes over and takes out Jurgen Klopp. And I think there's talk that he's broken his collarbone.
Oh, no.
What he should have done is done that on the Arsenal technical area, because, of course, Mikel Arteta wouldn't have been there, would he?
No.
So it would have been fine. He's never home.
Yeah.
He gets packages left outside the technical area that he picks up later. He's never in. He's literally never in.
Yeah, he doesn't understand the concept of it. Mikel, like, he just sort of nods along like he does, but he just doesn't.
Leave it with a neighbour. Leave it with a neighbour.
Get in the technical area. I am in there. You're not. Where are you going?
It was one of those things which, like, it's a funny moment, but if someone's come off the back of it with a broken collarbone, it's not funny, Jim. It's no laughing matter.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This episode of the Football Ramble is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life throws many different challenges at us, and as a result, we all have our own sources of stress. Whether big or small, those stresses can impact our lives in unpredictable ways, and if we don't address them, they can have an outsized and unwanted impact. Therapy is a safe place in which we can address these issues, learn to understand them, and find ways to work through them. Having therapy can be beneficial to anybody, not just people who've experienced major traumas, even if you may have not considered it before. It could be simply a time for you to get things off your chest, a way to learn positive coping skills, or how to set boundaries. Ultimately, it can be whatever you need it to be. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire and BetterHelp will match you to a licensed therapist. You can even switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
I'm Martin Keown and you're listening to Football Ramble.
Yeah, maybe just one small bit of the Football Ramble. That'd be all right.
Hi. I'm Martin Keown and you're listening to the Football Ramble. I'm Martin Keown.
On the issues that people have staying upright, and that's a general issue around the Christmas period for all of us, but I mean not as much for professional athletes, one wouldn't have thought, but it wasn't an issue earlier, and at one point Gabriel Jesus fell over.
Yeah.
After I don't know if you saw this, and I know it's been picked up, and we were recording straight after the game, so maybe it'll get picked up on social media as well, but I saw it at the time. Van Dijk leans into the back of Zach Jesus, who falls over. Now, I think he might have tried to exaggerate the contact like strikers do, but because the pitch was crap, it looked weird. And as the ref came over, you saw Virgil van Dijk make a drinking mimic thing and say, "Has he been drinking, ref?" Which I just thought was a really strange insult.
I guess, you know, maybe it's just to get around the sort of yellow card rule. Like, they've got to be creative with sort of suggesting that perhaps a booking is appropriate without actually saying it outwardly.
No, he was. It's an insult, really. And on maybe one final thing on the because basically, if Van Dijk's the one that wants to complain about anything, he should really be complaining about the fucking ground staff at Anfield. But there was a big slip from Saka towards the end of the game in the middle of the pitch where he completely totaled Ryan Gravenberch, which could have been nasty. I know that the I don't think some of the Liverpool players, I don't think, realise what had exactly happened.
I think if you see that in real time, you'd understandably think it was a really shocking tackle.
And that's why it's important, because if that happens, these players move at speed, they're strong, they're proper athletes, obviously. And for them to go over like that or slip like that, which is eventually ends up with 2 feet at speed smashing into someone's shins, that's why it's really important the pitch is good. I don't know what's going to happen with that. I mean, maybe someone will come out and explain what went on. I thought it was an interesting situation because it was a really high-quality game in the first half.
Mm.
But then the second half, it deteriorated, presumably because the pitch deteriorated. And then, it seemed like the players wanted to continue this quality of play, but they weren't able to. And then it even happened again. I mean, sorry to keep saying it, but it really happened again with the Trent Alexander-Arnold chance on the break, which was a terrifying, probably the most terrifying break I've seen in the Premier League this season.
Mighty Ducks stuff, wasn't it?
It was
just
mad.
I swear there were like more than 11 players in that breakaway somehow. I'd said out loud, surely they're going to score here. Surely they are. And it's just
five players against, I think, I can't remember, but one Arsenal defender. I mean, and it bobbled, didn't it? The ball bobbled. If you look at slow motion again, it bobbled up off a weird thing on the pitch. And Alexander-Arnold, who's technically sensational and who was really good actually overall in that game, obviously hit the crossbar, and that was a missed opportunity. That could have been it for Liverpool, really.
I think you're going to get slices of luck across the season. And if you could sort of pick where you're going to get it, Anfield away is absolutely probably the main one that you would, certainly from an Arsenal's perspective, you would spend that luck on. And that was the sort of defining moment of it, really. Like, I feel like Arsenal got a point out of a game they lost there through the penalty decision and that breakaway. And they had a couple of forays into Liverpool's box towards the end of the half, but there was the runners weren't quite making the right runs, and the decision making was a little bit too kind of snappy. Maybe there wasn't certainly lost a bit of fluency. But this is it, isn't it? Quite often. In most games, both of these teams, they dominate the ball. And that presents a very, very different set of challenges than a game where you're going to have to scrap for it and fight for it and know that you're not going to have it for a long period. So it was an interesting look into these two teams' modes in the big games, really. I mean, do you come away from it as a neutral, obviously, which I try to be, but can only be to so much of a degree. But what do you think this says about both teams in terms of the title race and who's kind of... Who's kind of better equipped to go the distance?
Well, it's quite interesting, isn't it? Because if you look at this point, you'd say there's three outstanding candidates to win the Premier League this season, right? Arsenal, Liverpool, Man City. And you've got a dark horse, if you like, in the shape of Aston Villa. And for me, that's the conversation, right? I mean, it may prove to not be the case, but that's how I feel at the moment. The big winners from this weekend's football are Manchester City. Because Arsenal and Liverpool have drawn and dropped points, and Aston Villa have drawn as well. So they've also dropped points because they rescued a point against Sheffield United, didn't they? So Man City are probably the big winners. But then, of course, that involves them being consistent themselves, which they haven't been recently. I just thought it was two good teams going at it. And, it's the old cliche, but in that type of game, even this early in the season, if you can't win it, you've got to ensure you don't lose it. And both teams were able to do that. I mean, Jurgen Klopp said afterwards, thank you, Anfield. My God, that's what we're capable of doing. That's what we can do, And he said he was very complimentary to Arsenal. He said, oh my God, how strong are they? The good news is we're good as well. And I think that probably sums it up because Arteta said something similar before the game. He said, because he's also, as you've mentioned earlier, compared playing Liverpool and Anfield to being stuck in the washing machine. And he confusingly said after that, what we must do is put on our washing machine that is also very powerful. So there's washing machines everywhere.
There are. Am I right in thinking as well there are washing machines inside washing machines at this point, which is quite a thing to behold.
Feel like a washing machine when no player can stay upright for.
Yeah, it does. Is there a possibility, Luke, that the pitch was so slippery as Manchester City have put their filthy oil all over it? Their oil money all over the pitch.
I think it's absolutely possible. I think that's definitely almost like a wacky racist type idea.
Yeah, very much so.
Or James Bond squirting out the back of the car. I really liked it when Peter Drury asked, speaking of, if you can If you can't win a game, don't lose it. Peter Drury's excellent. Like, he's actually a real breath of fresh air. He comes out with some great stuff. I think he's a real asset to the Premier League broadcasting team at Sky Sports. But he's also clearly like a very clever guy, right? And Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher, you know, God bless him. You know, I think Carragher's probably slightly cleverer than Gary Neville, but neither of them are particularly clever. And so sometimes Peter Drury will come out with stuff and it's obvious that Neville and Carragher just don't know what he's talking about.
Happened
brilliantly in this game because towards the end of the game, Peter Drury directly asked both of them. It wasn't even just like a throwaway rhetorical question. He asked them both, Gary, Jamie, at this point, is discretion the better part of valour? And neither of them said anything. So then he just had to go... would either team take a point at this stage? And they both went, oh yeah, we'll start talking about it.
Yeah.
It was an amazing kind of juxtaposition between, like, you know, the commentator's job and the co-commentator's job. And then obviously Drury did a really pained last Christmas line at the end of the game as well, which Sam Matterface gets hammered for prepping these lines.
Yeah.
But Peter Drury obviously does them as well, but people like it. Why do you think that is?
I think there's a sense of Peter Drury now. He's in that sweet spot, the sort of Goldilocks zone that a lot of commentators get into, which Clive Tilsley sort of has managed to get himself into a little bit as well, where they've been around for long enough that they've become sort of like a sort of beloved institution, but they've not outstayed their welcome to the point where perhaps John Motson did and Martin Tyler
did. So Matterface is just a bit of an upstart doing
that. Yeah, I think Matterface will probably, he might well get to that stage, but it might not, it might take 30 years. This is it, isn't it? You expect that sort of thing from Peter Drury. Imagine having a Christmas dinner at Peter Drury's house. You have the chat around the dinner table would be brilliant. You'd be having a lovely time. You'd be quoting all types of things. It'd be great.
Imagine if it was just you and him though.
It would be kind of strange. A lot would have to happen between now and Monday for that to be the case.
What about if you can have Arsenal win the Premier League this season, but for the whole of next season, you've got to live with Peter Drury?
I'd take that. Yeah, I mean, I think my girlfriend might be a little confused as to
how bad are your current living arrangements. You were very, very quick to jump on that.
Well, you know, I'm desperate for a league title, as you all know.
So this is what you're going to say to your girlfriend, is it?
Yeah.
This is the prep.
She'll probably listen to this and go, you didn't even hesitate. Yeah. Which I'm now realising I haven't done. It's how much I want it, need it, dare I say.
All right, before we wrap up, I've got one or two questions I wanted to ask you when I knew we were going to be doing this. One is, and actually Gary Neville made this point as well, speaking of Gary Neville, he said... Yeah, and it's come up a bit in recent seasons, really. The point about Arsenal perhaps needing a stronger focal point up front. And what I mean by that is that I turned him French, didn't I? Nketiah.
You did.
He's the jury's still out on him. I think he's decent, but, you know, the jury's, he's not, you know, people aren't going to be confident about winning the Premier League title with him leading the line for them every game. And Gabriel Jesus likes to wander, doesn't he? He's like a bit of an Alan Wicker. He likes to get all over the place.
He's a funny one as well, in that if a chance is really difficult, he seems more likely to score it than he does if it's simple. It's weird.
And so the general, the direct question then is it much more beneficial for Arsenal to have a strong focal point up front?
I think that needs to be the next piece of this particular puzzle. Yeah, I mean, it's important to remember how much Gabriel Jesus has raised the technical level in the front line and how he's a big part of that fluency. But I think inevitably you do need someone who's going to get you 20 league goals maybe, and he's just not going to do that. I think he likes to play on the wings and he's very effective on the wings. Bukayo Saka is really, really overloaded every season, seems to be the case. Jesus, I think there's absolutely a place for him, even if a striker comes in who's an upgrade on Nketiah, with all respect to Edouard Nketiah.
A big graduate of the Clairefontaine Academy.
Indeed. So, yeah, I think... if Arsenal can afford it, this is the big thing coming into the next window. There's a lot of talk of Ivan Toney, obviously, and people sort of daydreaming about Victor Osimhen, which I think is a bit daft, personally. But
just saw a new contract today.
Well, indeed,
130 million euro release clause. Well, would that put Arsenal off? Possibly not.
I would assume so. This is the thing as well. They signed him for a lot of money, Osimhen, and people forget that. So it's going to take an absolute fortune to get him out there. I think absolutely it is something that certainly needs to be addressed. It's whether or not the budget is there, because there are, you know, possibly midfield enforcements needed as well with Thomas Partey's unavailability.
Try and get some money off Man City, borrow some.
Mm.
There will definitely be a role for Jesus if they get a... Sure. Because I mean, Jesus can play off the left and the right as well.
Absolutely.
Like, he's played... I'm pretty sure... I mean, I might be going crackers in my old age, but I'm pretty sure I've seen him play off the left and off the right. So he's definitely got a role there. I mean, speaking of focal points up front, Michael Owen, he's had a bit of a weird couple of weeks, just talking about throwing things and how brave he is. And all sounded a bit like... you know those adverts you get where it's like, this is what this charity does, so give us some money. Mm. Like, it was a bit like that, but just Michael Owen talking about throwing things and how brave he is. And if can you please just support his bravery by donating to 80124 or something? It was very strange.
Yeah, he's an odd little fellow, isn't he, as we know. He's convinced he's sort of this really cheeky, charming little impish guy.
Yeah.
But actually, he's just a massive, massive weirdo in a way that's really difficult to put your finger on. The thing you were talking about, the other thing, was at the whichever red carpet he was on, or whatever it was. Not really a red carpet, is it? Not really a red carpet kind of guy, because obviously he hates films. But he was talking about throwing a dart.
And yeah, that's what I'm saying.
The person who got hit with it, he sort of blamed them for that.
Like, yeah, they were an absolute idiot. Yesterday,
yeah.
But I mean, it's great because all I've got to say is the words Michael Owen and you go off on one, which is what I wanted. But all I was actually going to add is that it's just come out now. Robbie Fowler's been sticking the boot into Mickey.
Robbie Fowler?
As well. I don't know. I don't really know. It's something that came out that was reported by the Mirror. Robbie Fowler's obviously asked about this. And he said he was better than Michael Owen in every aspect of being a striker. Which just feels like another front that Mickey doesn't need opened up.
Absolutely. It's harsh on Mickey. Because obviously Robbie Fowler was a really, you know, if natural finishes are a thing, then Robbie Fowler was one of them. He had so much in his locker. But, I mean, so did Owen. He really could really sniff out a goal in a lot of different situations. It's not what he needs, is it? It's a strange one. It might be the case that you see this with a lot of professional footballers, that they kind of... The longer they're retired, the better they were in their mind.
I think that's everyone, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Because obviously Fowler was brilliant, and that suggests that he's kind of deluded to talk about himself being great. But obviously he was. But it's an odd time to bring that up, isn't it? Because Michael Owen's got no real right of reply.
It was apparently on Simon Jordan's podcast, which is where the original Michael Owen quote came from.
Mm.
So it's
doing the Lord's work. This is massive for us.
Jordan playing a huge role in this, and as someone who knows Simon Jordan fairly well and has worked with him in the past, he will be delighted to be the centre of attention, of course. look, I think that's pretty much it from us. I mean, it's a really tricky thing to say because it was a draw, and you know, we're kind of where we were beforehand, and we were hoping for like a big statement. We didn't get one. But I will ask you anyway, what's your kind of summary? Where do you feel that Arsenal are? And Liverpool are. What do you think this means for the rest of the season, if anything?
I would reiterate what I said at the start of the podcast, which is that I think this is a better point than the one last season, because Liverpool are. I'll start with Liverpool. They are leaps and bounds ahead of where they were last season. Really, it's kind of mad to look at this team and think it's a team that's not in the Champions League, because I think they're clicking really, really well. That's really sort of new midfield is calibrated very quickly. They look so dangerous. Obviously, they didn't quite take their chances tonight, but you feel like they might have just had a little bit of an off day in front of goal and got a bit unlucky with a penalty call. So I expect them to essentially challenge for the majority of the season. It's hard to sort of pick much between the two teams, really. It was very much a case of, I think, quality sort of cancelling out quality, really, because the defensive sides of both teams are so strong as well. I think with Arsenal, they're harder to beat maybe this season. It's kind of much of a muchness, really. They look a bit more emotionally in control. They are managing games pretty well, and they just look tough to beat. One of the big problems that Arteta had to fix was to, you know, get rid of that soft centre, stop them from doing banter club things and conceding stupid goals and looking like slightly farcical. And he's managing to do that. But yeah, I'm you know, quietly very comfortable with Arsenal at the moment, which is something I don't often feel.
Mm. And Mikel Arteta said in the post-match interview, I'm just reading it now, that it was the most intense game he's witnessed in 20 years.
Wow.
So, I mean, that tells its own story, I suppose. And you're right about Arsenal being tougher to beat, I think. You know, if you think of the two games they've lost this season, Aston Villa, you know, look, they're unlucky to not get anything out of that game.
Still played well.
They had a lot of chances, played well.
the other game was Newcastle, wasn't it, away from home, where they had more of the ball, more shots. You know, I mean, it was, I can't remember the exact detail of the game, but
the exact detail was that they were robbed by corrupt clowns, actually, I think.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. It was the mad VAR thing, wasn't it? Which was, I was actually very, very content with at the time. But, you know, let's not relitigate that. Because we've got our VAR thing in this game to talk about instead, which we're also ignoring. So I think that's about it from us. I've got the absolute pleasure of saying to all of our listeners, this is the final show we're doing, of course, before Christmas. Mm-hmm. So Merry Christmas to you all, I suppose. Thank you very much for your support throughout 2023. And we will be back on Boxing Day with part one of our Best of the Football Ramble from 2023, which of course will be a very, very short episode, but I mean, listen to it anyway. It's full of some great moments, like Spurs head loss against Newcastle, Man United's head loss against Liverpool, Andy Brassel's head loss against me in Jackson Cyclopedia when I got Portland Timbers and Portland Timberwolves mixed up. That's possibly the most angry I've seen him. And there's a lot of candidates for that, so that's coming out on Boxing Day. In the meantime, find us on Twitter, which is now known as X, and there's some great stuff on there. Mm-hmm. So do check out X, TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube at Football Ramble. And remember to subscribe on your podcast app. If you've got a few extra shekels around this time of year, we'd very much appreciate it if you would send those our way and subscribe to our Patreon, patreon.com/footballramble. Some absolutely fantastic stuff on the Discord. I'm on there all the time, but don't let that put you off. And I think that's pretty much it. We're the best place to keep up with the Christmas football. Always remember that. It's goodbye from Jim Campbell.
It certainly is. Have a brilliant Christmas, everyone.
And it's goodbye from me as well. See you soon.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.